This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of December 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of December, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Reading today is Norma York.
Hello.
And me, Keith Vincent, and I'll also be operating the computer recording and hoping to push all the buttons in the right order. As Christmas Day is just 1 week away as we record this, I should remind you there will not be another recording now until the 8th of January, so there will be a break of 2 weeks before we resume in the new year. Now, the main headlines this week: Trust U-turns on cancer care move, MP criticises Holmes plan for barracks, and first patients receive coronavirus vaccination as rollout continues. So, Norma, maybe have the story behind the first headline, please.
Trust U-turns on cancer care move. The Trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, has carried out a U-turn on moving a vital service out of the city. Patients were facing more than 40-mile round trip as Hampshire Hospital NH Trust Foundation Trust has in talks to move oncology care to the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. The department, which provides treatment for patients diagnosed with cancer, had moved out of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in April, almost at the start of the pandemic, to the private hospital BMI Sarum Road in Winchester. At the time, hospital chiefs said that the move was designed to keep the most vulnerable patients out of its main hospital and to enable them to continue to receive care. However, patients were told last month that BMI Sarum Road had given notice for the service to move out and the Trust made a major decision. The Trust had decided not to reinstate oncology services at Winchester Hospital and instead the department would be transferred to Basingstoke Hospital, with fears from some of the patients that this would be a permanent in light of the plans for the new state-of-the-art hospital. But as the Hampshire Chronicle approached the Trust for more details, the department was given a reprieve. A Trust spokesman said that the talks had been continuing with bosses at the BMI Sarum Road and a way forward had been found. The spokesman added that at the start of the pandemic, we moved our haematology and oncology services to the BMI Sarum Road Hospital in Winchester to minimise the risk of COVID-19 for some of our most vulnerable patients and to help our staff to continue to deliver this essential care. The availability at the BMI facility is the subject of an ongoing discussions. However, we are pleased to be able to say that for now, our oncology services will continue to be located there. It is not known how long oncology will remain in the private hospital. The move had alarmed some patients from in and around Winchester who were worried about making the trip to Basingstoke for their treatment. One patient, who wishes to remain anonymous, said that he faced a 40-mile round trip if the service had moved to Basingstoke. He said, "I don't have any transport. Luckily enough, I have a friend that has offered to take me. I could have hospital transport, but they go all round the houses." The patient, who had been receiving treatment for a year, continued, "If you're from Winchester, you should be extremely disappointed. If you live in Basingstoke and you're coming into Winchester for the treatment, you would be delighted." The patient said that he is absolutely delighted that the service will not be moving to Basingstoke at present. He added, "It makes not a most enjoyable day a lot easier. It makes my treatment a lot more comfortable." He now hopes that once the pandemic is over, oncology care will be reinstated at Nick Jonas Ward at Winchester Hospital, where treatment previously took place, but the future remains unclear. Speaking before the U-turn, another patient told the Chronicle, "It's unfathomable to understand why cancer treatment and services should be moved so far away from the local population of Winchester, particularly at a time when A, there is a predicted rise in cancer cases resulting from the pandemic, and B, there is considerable amount of housing being built around Winchester for which healthcare capability building needs to be factored in."
MP criticises homes plan for barracks. Winchester's MP has criticised plans for a major redevelopment of the city's army training camp. Last week, the Chronicle revealed proposals for the Sir John Moore Barracks in Lyttelton once the Ministry of Defence leaves the base between 2022 and 2024. But the master plan, which proposes to construct homes, employment and community facilities, has been criticised by Winchester MP Steve Brine. In 2016, when the MOD announced the closure of the barracks, Mr Brine, the then council leader Stephen Godfrey and business leaders joined forces in backing plans for a knowledge park. Proposals were then explored to bring hundreds of new high-skilled jobs to the 86-hectare Andover Road site, also known as Flowerdown. Following the master plan announcement, Mr. Brine said, "I remain thoroughly unconvinced it's a positive that the MOD are vacating Flowerdown, but if that is to be, I will go on making the case that instead of dumping another 1,000 houses on this side of Winchester, they should be imaginative and seek to create new high-quality employment to support the local and regional economy. Winchester, and this site in particular, is so well placed as a workplace destination, and we make almost nothing of it. Above all, they must not overdevelop this site, as that will go down extremely badly with those of us left living here long after the army have gone." Stephen Burgess, chairman of Lyttelton and Hairstock Parish Council, said that the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, part of the MOD, gave a briefing to the authority last month on the master plan. He said, "The MOD announced some time ago that Sir John Moore Barracks would close and the site would be available for redevelopment. Therefore, the proposal is no surprise, and their projected dates are approximately the same as they had forecast. Confirmation of the approximate dates have only emerged in the last few weeks, and we believe the MOD is looking to submit a planning application in the spring. On Wednesday evening, the first consultation event took place, which laid out the current master plan for the development." And there's a picture accompanying this article of Steve Brine and former leader councillor Steve Godfrey, Joy Carter, the from the University of Winchester, and Stuart Dunn from the Hampshire Chamber outside of the Flowerdown Barracks on Andover Road.
First patients receive coronavirus vaccine as rollout continues. The first wave of patients to receive a COVID-19 jab were welcomed to a vaccination hub in Winchester. Badgers Farm Community Centre has been transformed into a vaccination site and will see the health staff help with the rollout of the jab. Practices serving patients in all parts of the county took delivery of the vaccine on Tuesday, with some kicking off their clinics in the afternoon and the others starting their clinics yesterday, Wednesday. Practices in Hampshire are working together to set up local vaccination centres in surgeries, community centres and even a hotel. Nurses, paramedics, pharmacists and other NHS staff are working alongside GPs to vaccinate those aged 80 and over, as well as care home workers and residents, identified as priority groups for the life-saving vaccine. One of the first to receive the vaccine at Badgers Farm Community Centre was Richard Davies from Lyttelton. Dickie, aged 92, said, "It was very satisfying. The organisation has been first class." He continued, "I've been very careful to avoid any possible interaction with other people. It impacts on how you live. The vaccine will make it easier for our family to get together." Another was 92-year-old Stan Judd of Badgers Farm, who said, "I've had so many vaccines in my life. I was in the army and I went abroad, so I've had plenty of vaccines." Speaking about how he coped since the pandemic started, the army veteran added, "It's been horrible, but it's not stopped me from doing what I want to do, and I'm always abiding by the rules, and that's what everybody should have, which would have stopped it spreading." Another to receive the jab on Tuesday was the GP partner at Friarsgate Badgers Farm Surgery, was Dr. Valky Selvaratnam. Dr. Selvaratnam, aged 44, was given the vaccine due to his age, medical background and ethnicity, which puts him at a higher risk of COVID. He told the Chronicle, "It's a privilege to have it done today. It's very safe. I feel that I am in a privileged position to look after myself, but also my patients. Some of my patients are very keen to have the vaccine. Others are worried. I hope they see me having it done and they have more confidence. If I can do it, hopefully they will follow that." In the first afternoon, 120 patients were vaccinated, and once the Oxford vaccine becomes available, it is hoped that 2,000 patients a week will receive the jab. Mark Dryden, managing partner at Friarsgate, said, "I think it's emotional in a funny sort of way. It's been two solid weeks of preparation. The reaction from some of the patients today, they haven't been out for months and months. They are so appreciative. It's incredibly rewarding. There is a lot of relief because this particular cohort are looking forward to seeing their grandchildren for Christmas." And there are two pictures. There's one of the doctor receiving his vaccination and another one outside the COVID vaccination centre of Brian Lamming, centre co-chair, and Steve Bryan, MP, outside the hub.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical item, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. The following deaths have been announced. Bliss, Marjorie Ann Bliss, formerly of Otterbourne, died on the 6th of December, aged 100. Cox, David Cox, of South Wanston. Dalton, Colin Roger Dalton, who died peacefully at Brendan Care Nursing Home, Alton, aged 90. Dodd, Mark Dodd, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 90. Goodfellow, Herbert Goodfellow, died peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 87. Hellier, Margaret Christine Hellier, died peacefully on the 5th of December, aged 85. Jobling, Tim Jobling, died peacefully on the 9th of December. Judd, Rita Doreen Judd, died on the 5th of December, aged 85. MacLeod, Edwina MacLeod, nay Elias, died peacefully at Orchard Gardens Care Home. Richardson, Wendy Richardson, former head teacher at Week Primary School, died in France at her home, aged 81. Rhodes, Kathleen Margaret Haddon Rhodes, died peacefully on the 6th of December, aged 89. Schumark, Peter Winston Schumark, died on the 7th of December, aged 80. Stimpson, Maggie Stimpson, died on the 11th of October after losing her long fight with cancer. Stone, Sybil Mary Stone, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 5th of December, aged 94. And Wakeley, Albert Wakeley, died peacefully on the 9th of December in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 100. And now we move on to Christian comment, please, Norma.
And this is by Rosemary A. Baker and entitled A Christmas Like No Other. So, here we are, 10 days before Christmas 2020. The third Sunday in Advent is past and we have the fourth this coming weekend, leading on to Christmas Day itself and the following Friday. This will be Christmas that for most of us will be unlike any other in our lifetime because of the COVID pandemic and the restrictions this is placing on us about mixing with other people. Even single lonely people have in past years been able to go to church. Have your pre-Christmas customs and traditions been affected? Family gatherings, office parties, craft fairs, concerts and other seasonal activities cancelled? I belong to an international women's service organisation called the Soroptimists. Every year since I joined Winchester Club in 1985, we had either a Christmas meal or some other form of celebration. So we're having a festive occasion on Zoom. All our meetings, including having a speaker, have been done this way very successfully so far. Some are doing readings, some musical offerings. I'm recounting some of the Christmas memories from the Baker household, as I fear people would rather pay not to hear me sing. So we are amending our previous traditions to suit the occasion, but managing to include some of our old customs and rituals, especially as we will be providing our own drinks and mince pies and other festive nosh while listening to the others. We have decided to donate the money we would have spent on Christmas meal to local charities. We support, all year round, the Trinity Centre and the local women's refuge. Christmas, of course, is a traditional time for giving. Doubtless, we will all have the opportunity to watch our customary A Christmas Carol. This traditional tale by Charles Dickens reminds us to share our good fortune with those less fortunate, although hopefully we are not as miserly as Ebenezer Scrooge. This year particularly, there have been many deserving causes. Those who have been unable to work or have lost their jobs, as well as the many charities who have lost income as their income-generating shops have had to close or fee-paying visitors have not been allowed. Most people are familiar with Advent calendars, where a door is open to reveal a picture or a gift as we count down the 24 days to Christmas. Not so many may be familiar with a reverse Advent calendar. This is where you put something in instead of taking something out. Food can be donated at most supermarkets or at local food banks. There are also often drop-off points for gifts for those who may not be as lucky as we are, particularly thinking of the children and those who are alone. So whether celebrating traditionally or in a more modified or even new ways, may I wish all our readers a happy and peaceful Christmas. And that, as I say, was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. The first one is headed Time to Go from Michael Fielding of Cheriton Road, Fulford. Sir, is it not time for the red and white building blocks in Drury Street and North Walls to be removed and for vehicular access from Hyde Street to be restored to that junction? In my experience, their only function is to slow traffic quite considerably, which only adds to pollution in the city. I've seen an ambulance struggling to travel along Drury Street as it waited for the traffic lights at the North Walls Junction to change. Not just one change of lights, but two, or possibly three. The intention to ease social distancing may have been well-intentioned, but it's been more of a hindrance to the world at large than a success. And that was from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
The best present. Sir, I knew the vaccine was coming. I knew it was in Winchester and the rollout would be happening soon. That alone was hugely reassuring. I was not prepared for the overwhelming feeling of joy and emotional relief I felt on Monday morning when St Clement's Surgery called to say they would vaccinate my mum this week. This is surely the best present anyone with an older relative could have this year for Christmas. And that's from Angela Goodridge, Victoria Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This next letter is entitled Cycling Ideas, and it's from our very own Jane Harding, one of our readers. So it is certainly welcome to read that Winchester is finally aiming to increase facilities for cyclists. Having been a regular city cyclist in my daily life here for over 35 years, I long for improvement. The introduction of electric bikes will also increase cycling possibilities in our hilly city. May I suggest that those planning the routes need to try cycling every road included in the scheme? Only this way will the dangers be appreciated. In particular, where roads have been coated in a yellow surface to warning of a junction, as in Wellhouse Lane in Headbourne Worthy, for example, the surface almost instantly breaks up, creating hollows and dips which are lethal to cyclists. The same happens when the roads have been prettily cobbled, as in the area around Kingsgate or the Minster streets. Again, the cobbles rapidly descend into dips which the cyclist must avoid by swerving into the road, and therefore into the path of cars coming behind. The cobbling of the edge of the high street forces bicycles to share the narrow tarmac stretch with the cars. The same happens where cheap road mending breaks into cracks and holes, particularly dangerous when rain conceals the depth of the holes, so the cyclist must swerve out. Once again, I make a plea for St. Peter Street to allow bicycles to travel north to south to avoid the North Wall circuit. Surely a cycle path could feature in the wide grass verges of such busy roads as the Badger Farm Road to give access to Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery. Cyclists should, of course, make themselves visible with rear and front lights, even in daytime, just as cars do at this time of year. Rechargeable lights are a wonderful invention. A high-vis jacket helps, plus the compulsory use of a bell, especially on shared cycle paths. Ever optimistic about improvement? Jane Harding, Backstreet, St Cross, Winchester.
And this is about Silver Hill. Sir, recent letters to the Chronicle focus on Winchester's High Street and Central Winchester regeneration. Regeneration is a misnomer when applied to the council's progress. Let's start with the High Street. Debenhams, a much liked older department store, is closing and thus is now just a building. Why not repurpose the building as a new surgery for the St Clement's practice? It could be operational much quicker than waiting for a new build. Next, the Broadway. Why can't work start immediately on removing the central parking strip and landscaping the view of King Alfred? Then, the buses. Put the bus station in place of the sad Friars Gate car park, entering off Tanner Street and exiting onto Friars Gate. Easy to access for laden shoppers and not interfering with pedestrians in Silver Hill regeneration, and a lot cheaper than the scheme for King's Walk. Finally, Council, put forth some of the action you were elected for. Refurbish the Lower Brook and plant trees along it, plus trees in portable containers elsewhere in the regeneration area. This beginning to fulfil your greenhouse promises and relatively inexpensive start for a long delayed, maybe even obstructed project. And that's from Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Fulford, Winchester.
This letter is headed Care Disgrace by Mrs. D. Barnes of West End. So I entirely agree with Mr. O'Neill that the treatment of residents of care homes during the first lockdown was a disgrace and should be investigated fully. Matt Hancock stated on national television in May that there was a protective ring of care around care homes, but this was shown not to be the case when thousands of people died, staff as well as residents, and many of the survivors were permanently damaged, physically and or mentally, by the illness and the enforced isolation. The lack of provision of the right sort of PPE is another issue, as the Good Law Project has shown that contracts to supply equipment were fast-tracked and awarded to people known to government representatives, but not necessarily competent. And we already knew that much of the PPE that arrived was not fit for purpose. Investigation should help to ensure that none of that happens again. We're already in a second wave of the virus and maybe heading for a third, so this needs sorting out. Adequate PPE must be supplied and people in care homes must be properly protected and allowed to see their families. Let us ensure that at least our Hampshire MPs are on the case by emailing, phoning or writing to them. And that's from Mrs. D. Barnes, Glenlee Close, West End.
Another objection to Royal Down. Sir, I object to the Royal Down housing project of building 5,000 homes south of Winchester. It is too many. Winchester needs green belt land, and it's partly what makes Winchester a unique city in the world and in history. For those who wish to object to the 5,000 homes, there's a Facebook group called Save South Winchester. It's a great group. Join up and get your voice heard. In my view, we should infill Winchester. The old Friars Gate Surgery and other buildings at Silver Hill have sat empty for many years. Here's an idea. Convert those places into City Council starter flats on peppercorn rents for the homeless and others on low income. I'm a proud Wintonian and English Democrat. In our party, we campaign for places to keep their green belts of land. And that's from Mark Rowe of Taplin's Close Week, Winchester. And there is a map of the said Royal Down proposal.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Normally we would have the historical items, but at the moment the Chronicle is not publishing the 200 years, 100 years, 50 and 25 section. However, this time they have got a historical item in on the Queen's visit to Winchester in 1979 with a page of photographs of the Queen as she was outside the Law Courts issuing the Maundy money. It's Queen attends Maundy service. As the cast and crew of The Crown filmed at Winchester Cathedral in January this year, we now take a look back at an occasion in which the Queen visited for real. April the 11th, 1979 was a special day for Winchester Cathedral, not just because of the royal visit, but because it was celebrating a milestone. To mark the cathedral's 900th anniversary, the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh popped by to wish it many happy returns. A silver goblet was presented to the Queen, the first of a limited edition of 900, produced to commemorate the 900th anniversary of the cathedral. And the Queen attended a Maundy Thursday service at the cathedral and distributed silver coins known as Maundy money to elderly recipients. The Yeoman of the Guard attended the annual Maundy ceremony, the only time the Queen travels to give an award. And there are some lovely pictures of the crowd awaiting the Queen's arrival. She's outside the Law Courts talking to girl guides who are obviously amongst the invited guests. Crowds with cameras. Don't cameras look antiquated these days? No mobile phones, just cameras. The Queen and being greeted by the Lord Lieutenant and came to the Law Courts. And a young girl presenting a bouquet of flowers to the Queen outside the Law Courts. She looks very interested in receiving them. So a lovely set of photographs. And now we move on to Chronicle comment, please, Norma.
And this is entitled, Just What Exactly Is Going On at RHCH? We know that the National Health Service is facing almost unprecedented challenges with the coronavirus pandemic, on top of the seasonal and chronic pressures that it has to tackle day in and day out. But the story about the future of oncology services in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is highly worrying. It has been transferred earlier this year to the BMI Sarum Road Hospital to free space at the RHCH for COVID patients and to protect vulnerable cancer patients from the coronavirus. Then recently, patients were told that the oncology treatment was going to be transferred to the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, sparking fears about the downgrading of the RHCH with the pending decision on the new hospital to be built close to Basingstoke. For many patients, a journey to the hospital on the northern edge of Basingstoke is a difficult one. In the last 24 hours, it transpires that the plans have now changed and the services will be remaining for now at Sarum Road, patients and members of the public will have every right to ask exactly what is going on.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, which is this week submitted by George Hayter, and it says, use the hours after Christmas. Although I was born in 1952, I'm still young enough to get excited opening presents. When I was a boy, the best part of Christmas was removing wrapping paper and extracting total satisfaction from gifts such as a Rupert book, an Airfix kit, or the latest Beano annual. Such presents, together with Christmas TV, kept me happily occupied well past Boxing Day and even into the new year. These days I still love Christmas, but my enthusiasm lasts less long. By Boxing Day I've had enough. Boredom starts to set in. I know many people get cross at Christmas. Lots of families end up having a row. This year, if it doesn't start a household argument, I'm going to suggest an antidote to Yuletide discontent. It's something we tried on Boxing Day last year when we all agreed this powerful antidote worked. Despite presents, telly, beer, etc., I think a lot of people feel there's nothing much to do between Boxing Day and going back to work. The antidote dispels lethargy in that period and replaces it with zest for life. I got the idea for the unlikely antidote from the 2002 comedy film About a Boy, in which Hugh Grant plays a lazy millionaire. He fritters away his life by dividing each day into one-hour slots. Oh, they might have been half-an-hour slots, I'm not sure. All his slots were filled by not very worthwhile activities such as having his hair cut and watching daytime TV. So last year, we tried dividing Boxing Day into one-hour slots, but in a communal way, and with slightly more worthwhile activities. A joint timetable was agreed by dividing a sheet of paper into three columns. The three of us each had a column, and the sheet was divided vertically into one-hour slots starting at about 10 a.m. and ending at about 7 p.m. Onto the grid, everyone wrote in each space in their column to show how they would use each time slot. There were things like walk, cook dinner and read novel. We weren't hermits because we all wrote lunch in the same hour and we came together for other activities such as working on the 1,000-piece Waterloo Station jigsaw that was in progress on the dining table. Each hour when it was time to change activity, we all made sure that everybody stopped what they were doing, whether it was sorting out their stamp collection or trying to draw faces, making headway on their tax return or watching a video. However reluctantly, everyone had to move on to their next timetable activity, which might be sorting photos, writing a letter, or a communal game of throwing tennis balls into a washing-up bowl. Invariably, everyone soon got involved in what they were having to do next, and after an hour, be annoyed all over again about having to stop again. Any annoyance was short-lived and funny. It was hilarious being part of a high-speed conveyor belt of projects and pastimes. The result was a listless and uneventful Boxing Day transformed into a fun time, crammed with tasks done and pleasure enjoyed. Weeks later, I tried increasing my productivity by slicing an aimless weekday drudge into concentrated one-hour slots. On my own, it didn't work. I need people to force me to change activity each time. Surely you can change activity without being told to, you might think. Try it. And you'll find that whatever work or entertainment you're engrossed in, you'll say to yourself, I'll just finish this bit and then I'll stop. Once you've procrastinated once, it's hard not to let the next hourly change slip back even more, and you get further and further behind. Sooner or later, you find yourself hopelessly behind the timetable. But I guarantee it'll work with people at Christmas. Now we've got Belgarum, I think.
Indeed you have. And this relates to the speed van parked legally. Hampshire police have confirmed that a speed camera which was believed to be illegally parked on a grass verge in Winchester actually had permission to be there. A motorist who wishes to remain anonymous spotted the van parked alongside double yellow lines in Worthy Road in November. It was believed the camera was parked illegally, and he spoke to the person inside who said they had parked there for years catching speeding motorists. He told Belgaram, "I then clearly pointed out that she was parked illegally and that they are not exempt for parking restrictions, meaning thousands of motorists have been caught speeding by a camera that legally shouldn't be there." A civilian was said to be inside the vehicle. The woman was sarcastic towards me and thought the whole situation was funny as I did not know the law. He added, another member of the public joined our discussion and agreed she should not park there and was breaking the law. Clearly breaking the law and making speeding convictions unsafe. This needs to be made public as it's a disgrace. But the constabulary has now told Belgaram that the speed camera van was parked legally. A spokesperson said, the speed camera van in question was parked legally. We are permitted to park in this location as part of our road safety work. All locations where we operate speed checks are thoroughly risk assessed and decisions to set up checks are always evidence based. We will always ensure we are legally permitted to carry out speed checks in areas such as this one, with exemptions in place for parking of a vehicle for this purpose. The exemption can be put in place for locations where there are concerns from us or the local community over road safety. An investigation carried out by Belgaram has seen that different guidance has been published by a number of authorities. In this case, the van, pictured, is not blocking the highway or the pavement, but there are double yellow lines along the stretch of road. According to the latest available report by Hampshire County Council regarding parking on grass verges, footpaths and pavements, it has become increasingly widespread and creates significant problems in many areas for residents, highway users and for the council itself. However, the councils have published clearer guidance, including Surrey County Council. On its website, the authority states, in common law, drivers have the right to pass and repass along the road. There is no legal right to park on a road, verge or footway. Where no parking controls, such as yellow lines, waiting restrictions, are present on the road next to the verge, parking on the grass verge is not illegal. However, a driver may be open to prosecution if their vehicle is persistently damaging a verge, parked dangerously, or causing an obstruction.
Just before we do the announcements, there's the question and answer, My Winchester. And on this occasion, they interviewed Kath Whiting, who's a 47, a writer of magical realism fiction of Upper Brook Street. And she tells us her favourite things about the city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Tom's Deli, sitting in the socially distanced sun, sipping wine and eating delicious pizza with old friends and Tom's warm service. What's your favourite pub or bar? I'll have to say two. The Black Boy for its fantastic maximalist eccentricity, cosy corners and writing prompts. And the Jolly Farmer for its friendly staff, for hosting Tuesday night writers, and indulging our optimistic promises of one day them being blue-plaqued for one of us penning our first novel there. What's your favourite shop? All the charity shops, rooting through what Winchesterians recycle, rich pickings and all in a good cause. What's your favourite building? There's a small door on one of the hooves of Elizabeth Frink's Horse and Rider. I'm too big to get in, but I'm heard it's incredible. What's your favourite view? Oh, from West Hill Cemetery over to St Catherine's Hill, a great place to see the changing palette of the seasons. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Oh, it's unquestionably Kevin, the big issue seller. He does stand-up comedy all day. Fantastic talent. What's Winchester's best-kept secret? Oh, the little mauve monsters that live in the drains and come out and dance around the city at four every morning. I shan't share my evidence, but you're welcome to verify by staying up to watch. Shh. And what's the best thing about Winchester? being able to walk into wildlife, but also into the city centre, the cinema, the swimming pool, and a fastish train to London. Small, but perfectly formed. And the worst? The water table. And if there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Put it by the sea. And now, lighting up time ends Friday the 18th of December at 8:05 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. And next Wednesday the 23rd of December, it ends at 8:08 a.m. and begins at 4:02 p.m. Past the watershed and it starts to get shorter nights, longer days.
Oh.
And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please telephone Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And now we continue with items of general news. Norma.
Well, I'm going to start with an R picture. A new tiger arrives at Marwell after the death of Mila. An endangered female Amur tiger is the latest arrival at Marwell Zoo. Valentina arrived at the Colden Common Wildlife Park from Hodini Zoo in the Czech Republic. She will be companion for the wildlife park's male tiger, Baggy. Ian Goodwin, animal collection manager, said, "We are excited to welcome Valentina. She's settling into her new home well, and she has some positive interaction with Bengali. With lots of sniffing and chuffing through the fence. Valentina is a young animal, and we hope one day that she may mother cubs to help secure the future of the species. She replaces Mila, aged 11, who died in September whilst under general anaesthetic to fit a new contraceptive. Amur tigers found in the Russian Far East and northeastern China are endangered, with fewer than 500 believed to be in the wild due to extensive habit loss and poaching. The zoo is home to more than 140 species, including snow leopards and white rhinos." And there is a lovely picture of Valentina. She really looks as though she's posing for the camera because she's got her head slightly on one side and has very soulful eyes.
Cathedral School keeps traditions going. Pilgrim's School has been forced to celebrate the run-up to Christmas creatively this year. Due to the pandemic, pupils are unable to follow their traditions, or at least not in the usual way. However, the show must go on, and the annual nativity will be held on Zoom, with performers streaming their parts from individual classrooms. The Cathedral Carol Service will also happen virtually, and Head of Music Russell Duplessis has ensured that all 240 children will be involved. Carols have been recorded in year group bubbles and will be pieced together. Lucy Brown of the school said, "It's a very different run-up to Christmas at school this year. The pandemic has forced us to come up with some fairly creative solutions. This is the first Winchester Christmas for our new head, Dr. Sarah Essex. And last week she and the choristers witnessed a moment of wonder as the cathedral tree lights were switched on and the boys sang Away in a Manger to the press." Dr. Essex has ensured tradition continues here, but this year, differently. In this Advent season, we help Pilgrim's boys show gratitude and think of those less fortunate than themselves. Year 3 boys read stories and sing to the residents of St. John's Almshouses. Christmas Jumper Day and a gift stall collection raised funds and toys for the Salvation Army to distribute in Winchester. The School Charities Committee, led by Year 8 Ben, has launched an appeal to raise money for Allegra's Ambition, a charity that encourages people to get active and have fun. And there's some photographs of the boys donating to the Salvation Army Christmas appeal and giving away some of their toys, even Star Wars, and a picture of the choristers in front of the Christmas tree in the cathedral.
Former Dean James Atwell dies aged 74. A former Dean of Winchester has died, aged 74, following a short illness. The Very Reverend James Atwill was Dean of Winchester for 10 years to 2016, when he retired to be replaced by the current Dean, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle. She said on the Winchester Cathedral website, "It is with great sadness that we share the news of the death of the Very Reverend James Atwill, Dean Emeritus of Winchester. James died at home with family following an illness. James was greatly loved Dean of Winchester from 2006 to 2016, and before that of St Edmundsbury, and it was an honour to follow as his successor here. We are grateful for his wise counsel and teaching and the outstanding commitment that he lived out each day to the life and ministry of this cathedral and to the people of Hampshire. We extend deepest sympathies to Lorna and his family in their loss. He died on Saturday in Cambridge, surrounded by his family. The details of the funeral will be announced when finalised. It will be live streamed from the cathedral. Dean Atwill was educated at Dauncey and Exeter College, Oxford and Harvard in the USA, and was ordained in 1971, later working in London, Cambridge and Towcester and Bury St Edmunds. At Winchester, he oversaw the growth of the annual Christmas market and ice ring that has helped secure the cathedral's finances, security and launched a major restoration programme to increase visitor numbers. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, offered his sympathies to the family of the former Dean and shared his memories of working with him. He said, "I am saddened to hear of the death of the Very Reverend James Atwill. His passion for Winchester Cathedral, love for pastoral ministry in the community and commitment to follow the Lord was encouragement to many. It was a great pleasure to work alongside James during his time as Dean of Winchester. Lorna and the rest of his family and friends are in my thoughts and prayers. May the Lord comfort and bless them, particularly over the Christmas period." And there's a lovely picture of a very smiling Reverend James Dean of Winchester opening the ice rink in 2015 with the help of TB presenter Debbie Thrower left and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear.
Santa's running for hospice remotely. Did you spot any Santas running through the local streets? There may not have been hundreds this year, but the Naomi House and Jack's Place annual Christmas fun run still went ahead. The charity held a virtual version in which participants of any age created their own 5-kilometre route. Charlotte Patrick, events fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Although we're really disappointed that our normal event can't take place in Winchester, we're so excited to be able to encourage people to join in the fun in their local area. This event is for all ages and we can't wait to see the photographs of everyone dressed up in their Santa suits. Mums, dads, children, grandparents, work colleagues. Even though everyone has to be mindful of government guidelines due to the pandemic, they can still have loads of fun and laughs while supporting local children and young adults with serious illnesses." And there's three photographs. I really don't think they need coronavirus masks. They've got these huge white beards and moustaches on, which cover most of their faces. Can't really tell who's who in amongst these photographs. But they're all dressed in bright red Santa outfits and Santa hats, and obviously doing their exercising. I think they're mostly in fields. Some at Twyford, and there's Bridget Gray, Oliver Gray and Lucy Gray, and that's the Naomi House fundraiser. Looks like that photograph is at the back of Naomi House itself. And yes, there's an assembly of Santas in Ballard Close at Twyford in a field, all suitably socially distanced. And it looks like they're enjoying themselves.
I like that, an assembly of Santas.
An assembly of Santas, yes. Yeah, I think we should put that in the dictionary. Okay.
Marshals set to patrol district. Coronavirus marshals have been introduced across Winchester District as lockdown restrictions remain in place, it has been announced. Winchester City Council has launched a COVID-19 ambassador and marshal scheme to assist in promoting social distancing, providing information and support, and encouraging compliance with measures. As well as helping to bring the district down to Tier 1, they will also tell the council of any issues that need to be resolved. The City Council has said that COVID ambassadors will be patrolling not just Winchester, but Bishops Waltham, Alsford and Wickham. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, said, "Supporting our community and the local economy has been a priority for the City Council throughout the pandemic, and with the introduction of the new restrictions, we are putting in place some additional measures that will help to make the district's high street COVID secure this Christmas and into the new year." During the day, City Council ambassadors will be out and about in Winchester, Bishops Waltham, New Alsford and Wickham, offering advice to visitors and businesses and helping to ensure that everyone is visit safe. In the evenings from Thursday through to Sunday, COVID marshals will be on hand to offer guidance to cafes, bars and restaurants and members of the public, helping to promote compliance with the latest COVID-19 restrictions. They will also make the council aware of issues that need to be resolved.
Tribute to war veteran Ted, aged 96. A Second World War veteran who was on firewatch duties for the Home Guard during the Blitz has died aged 96. Edward James Kennelly was also a successful electrical and mechanical engineer. Ted, as he was known, was born into a large family in East London in the 1920s, when cars were still a rare sight on the capital streets. As children, he and his sister Joan shared a tin bath with other children on their street, as soap was a real luxury. Ted was still a teenager when he joined the Home Guard shortly after the outbreak of war, carrying out firewatch duties during the Blitz. As soon as he was old enough, he joined the Royal Navy, serving first on a cruiser, HMS Newfoundland, where he learnt to be an engineer. After his first ship was damaged in a torpedo attack in the Mediterranean, he was reassigned to HMS Campanula, tasked with protecting the Atlantic convoys. Ted and his beloved wife Phyllis brought up three children, Joan, Jeff and Jane, while he built a successful engineering business after leaving the Navy at the end of the war. He stayed active for almost a century and tried to do something that would make his heart race every day. Ted spent his final years living with his family in St Cross and made many new friends at his lunch club, run by Winchester Wellbeing. He also attended the Chesil Lodge Daycare Centre, which became a real lifeline for him. And he is survived by his children, his grandchildren, and his great-grandchildren Daisy, Poppy, Ivy, Theo and Noah.
Award for Young Linguist. She may be only 12 years old, but Chloe Johnson is one of the world's best foreign language learners. The St Swithin School pupil came seventh at the annual Education Perfect Northern Championships, which features competitors from around the globe. Her score of 15,501 points also earned her a prestigious elite award. Chloe said, "I really enjoyed taking part in this competition and I'm very pleased to have done so well. The language I chose to study were German, French, Latin and Turkish, and I also learnt some English grammar. Overall, the Winchester School came second out of the schools in England who entered the competition and 15th in the world. It won a total of 28 awards in this year's competition, with its students cumulatively logging 482 hours answering language questions. Anne Steer, head of German at St Swithin, said, "Education Perfect sends each teacher a detailed report analysing how each student has performed in the learning of each list, and it gives us valuable feedback on what words students are finding difficult or not. EP has been a huge motivator in the way our students now learn their modern foreign language vocabulary, and we are very proud of their achievements in this competition. And there's a picture of Chloe Johnson with her award, and she's looking very pleased. 12, that's amazing.
Hockey Club back up and running. Winchester Hockey Club was back up and running again last weekend with trips to Hazelmere and Romsey. Against both opponents, the club won some and lost some. The rearranged Hampshire Development Centre sessions have added a complication to planning next weekend's fixtures, but the club says it will try to play as many of the games as possible. The under 14 boys and girls have also been invited to take part in an innovative new five-a-side tournament by King Edward VI School. The club said good luck to those players taking part in the development centre. These sessions are an important first step for players in the England hockey talent pathway, and we applaud those involved in making these happen under difficult circumstances. England hockey is planning fundamental changes to the wider player pathway over the next couple of years. This will impact all players that are motivated to achieve their hockey potential, and is also likely to have consequences for all clubs, including Winchester. Although changes are still some way off, we've started the planning process to make sure we, as a club, can deliver a high-quality hockey programme for all our junior hockey players. We will update you more on this over the next few weeks.
Waste centre access to be reviewed. Hampshire County Council is to further consider trials of pedestrian and cycle access to its household waste recycling centres. Initial proposals for a limited local trial were considered last week. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, said, "When the report was published proposing the local trial scheme at Alresford, it triggered wider interest, and I'm grateful for all those who contacted me or who came along to speak at the meeting today. I've listened to the community and to my fellow county councillors' ideas about people wishing to access HWRCs by foot or cycle, and it's clear to me that we now need to further consider how we can set about running a meaningful trial in a safe and controlled way, as well as during a period when there is likely to be the greatest demand in the spring or summer. I have therefore deferred to the decision on this to allow for further details to be developed in how the trial will run." Hampshire County Council went on to say that all its HWRCs operate in line with government guidelines on preventing the spread of coronavirus and in a way that supports social distancing.
Landlord fears for the future of his pub. A Winchester publican is worried that his once bustling boozer will lose its soul forever. Clive Mansell, the tenant at Green King pub The Full Flood Arms on Cheriton Road, is unsure of what the future holds. December is usually the busiest time of the year for him, but he's yet to serve a customer this month. He told the Chronicle, "Over the last 268 days, we've been either closed or working under COVID rules. We have no catering kitchen. Therefore, we are currently shut and we could not take advantage of the Eat Out to Help Out scheme. The Full Flood Arms is a unique, backstreet, quality local, but right now it's just an empty shell, dark, cold and unloved. And my worry is that after 9 months of stress, any licensees like myself will be unable to reopen. Pubs like ours will have lost their soul forever." Wayne Shervington, Green King Pub Partners Managing Director, added, "All our 875 tenanted pubs in England are in tiers 2 or 3, and the majority are still closed. Even for those that are allowed to open, it just isn't financially viable for many, with households banned from mixing in their pubs and alcohol not allowed except with a substantial meal. This is doubly disappointing, as December is the most important month of the year for pubs and is crucial to supporting them throughout the year. Clive runs an amazing pub, but even under Tier 2 regulations, his pub is still shut down. This comes despite pubs investing millions of pounds to make sure they've brought in all the safety measures requested by the government earlier in the year. We are discounting rents by 90% for our tied partners in Tiers 2 and 3, but if thousands of pubs are forced to remain closed across the country, even this may not be enough without further government support or a review of the restrictions. And there's a picture of the Full Flood Arms and an inset of Clive and a van outside unloading cases and cases of drink, but obviously not right at the moment.
COVID decline in district set to reverse. The recent decline of coronavirus in the Winchester district appears to be stopping, according to the latest figures. COVID-19 has been on the rise again in most places across Hampshire for several days, but had been falling in Winchester. In the 7 days to last Friday, December the 11th, the Press Association National News Agency reports there were 84 cases locally compared to 69 in the previous 7 days. The rate per 100,000 people in the 7 days to last Friday, December the 11th, in the Winchester district was 67.3 compared to 202.4 in the worst areas. Portsmouth, 196.5 in Havant and 191.3 in Rushmore. The rate in the previous 7 days to December the 4th for those four areas were 55.3, 144.1, 126.8 and 97.3. In the 7 days to Tuesday, there were 87 cases compared to 63 in the previous week. But Winchester is still in the bottom 20 for infection rates out of more than 300 local authorities across the UK, as are Test Valley and Eastleigh. There are 30 COVID patients at the RHCH compared to 39 at the start of the month. There are 45 at Basingstoke Hospital compared to 69 previously. For clarity, Winchester District comprises more than the built-up city and is a council area which stretches from Micheldever in the north to Southwick in the south, from Sparshot in the west to Bramdean in the east. The number of coronavirus cases in the Winchester District increased in the last 24 hours from 1,874 to 1,887, an increase of 13, an infection rate since March of 1,511.3 per 100,000. In the NHS across Hampshire, 31 people are reported to have died in the 7 days to Tuesday, with 10 in the HHFT area that includes the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Homestart link up with Waitrose. Like children across the country this weekend, twins Isabella and Elliot Brown, aged 7, and little sister Isla, aged 3, are getting ready to tuck into the Christmas spirit. Chocolate advent calendars have become a seasonal rite of passage for many youngsters, so it's appropriate the first donation to Homestart Winchester from the local branch of Waitrose was a trolley full of 60 calendars for sharing with vulnerable families. The initiative is the start of a £5 million fundraising partnership between John Lewis, Waitrose, Homestart and Fairshare to create an outpouring of kindness in communities across the country. In Winchester, Homestart and Waitrose have already begun working together to Give a Little Love, the theme of this year's John Lewis TV advertisement. Waitrose community activator Clodagh Rogers said, "We're happy to do anything to make children happy." And there's a lovely picture of the smiling youngsters with their mum, with their advent calendars. I guess they can't wait really to open the first day with the various chocolate bars attached to it. So, well done them.
Low morale for police. The impact of the coronavirus pandemic on police officers in Hampshire has been laid bare in a major survey, as two-thirds say morale has taken a major hit. The Police Federation, which represents more than 130,000 officers from the ranks of constable to chief inspector across England and Wales, has published the results of its annual pay and morale study. It found that of 681 respondents from Hampshire Constabulary, 66%, more than 400, felt the COVID-19 pandemic had a negative or very negative impact on morale this year. A survey showed officers have not received training to cope with the pandemic. 21% said they had had no training, while a third said they'd had inadequate access to personal protective equipment, PPE.
More cars in the city. Thousands more cars are owned by people in Winchester than a decade ago, new figures show. Entire communities are facing little choice but to use a car, according to the RAC, which says drivers feel public transport simply isn't practical or doesn't meet their needs. Figures from the Department of Transport reveal there were 69,398 car registrations in Winchester in June this year, up from 62,792 in 2010, an increase of 11%. It means there is one car for every 1.4 adults, whereas the average for Britain is 1.7. The rise of cars in Winchester reflects the national picture, which has also seen increases in areas with the highest proportions of deprived neighbourhoods. Across Britain, car ownership has risen 11% from 2010. According to the Bank of England, personal contract purchase plans account for 1 in 5 new cars, and the rise in their popularity may be contributing to the rise in ownership. The RAC's report on motoring found 68% of people said a car was essential for shopping and 59% for meeting with friends and family. Spokesman Rod Dennis said, "Even before the pandemic, drivers told us they were becoming more, not less, reliant on their cars. As well as the obvious benefits a car brings for families in particular, many drivers have felt for a long time that public transport either isn't practical or doesn't meet their needs, with services often seen as too expensive or too infrequent."
And on the car theme, speeding fines surpassed 89,000 last year. More than 89,000 drivers was caught speeding in Hampshire last year, analysis has revealed. Home Office figures show that Hampshire Constabulary recorded 89,315 offences in 2019-2020. This was 22% more than the 73,031 logged the previous year, and more than double the 8% increase across the 43 forces in England and Wales. In Hampshire, cameras caught nearly all, 98%, recorded offences last year, which accounted for 93% of all motoring offences over the period, compared with 85% across England and Wales. Speeding drivers in the area were sent on speed awareness courses on around 47,300 occasions, while around 26,300 offences resulted in a fine. Offences were cancelled in around 9,000 cases, while 6,700 resulted in court action. Earlier this year, the Chronicle also revealed that 12,000 drivers were caught speeding through the M27's temporary 50-mile-an-hour speed limit since it was set up in February 2019. The Freedom of Information request revealed how average speed cameras clocked 12,295 drivers breaking the temporary limit between the Farnham and Eastleigh since it was introduced in February 2019. So beware.
Bishop Tim's message for Christmas. The Bishop of Winchester's Christmas message 2020 is an appeal to think of those less fortunate than ourselves. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin said, "We all know that this year's Christmas celebrations will be different. For many families, there will be no celebration as they come to terms with spending Christmas without their loved ones and perhaps grieving. The coronavirus pandemic, which has devastated so many lives, has emphasised how fortunate we are to live in a country where we can access free medical care through the NHS, regardless of our background or financial status. For many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the Anglican community, access to medical care is not freely available, and the pandemic has pressurised understaffed health services in our companion Links provinces. In the Diocese of Winchester, this year's Christmas appeal is raising funds through the Archbishop of Canterbury's Anglican Communion Together in Unity appeal, to support COVID-19 projects in Chile, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar, Rwanda and Uganda. Our gifts will be designated to support the projects which these companion link provinces have submitted. I'll put my teeth straight. By giving generously to our friends in the Anglican community, we can help to bring hope and light this Christmas. The birth of God's Son, Jesus Christ, more than 2,000 years ago, brought new hope and light to a broken world. The promise of a transformed world and eternal life with him. This same promise is offered to each of us today. Usually, Christmas brings with it the comfort and joy of family, friendship and celebration. For Christians celebrating the true meaning of Christmas, comfort and joy are found in knowing the love of God who came to us in the birth of Jesus and who comes to us now in all our joys and sorrows, celebrations and disappointments. It is my prayer that we all find comfort and joy this Christmas, perhaps in unexpected ways, and as we journey together into 2021, may we be surprised by joy.
Live shows return to the Theatre Royal. The first live performances at the Theatre Royal Winchester since March have taken to the stage. The theatre hosted the first previews of its socially distanced Christmas show, Four Dames in Search of a Panto. It features panto set pieces including the much-loved 12 Days of Christmas, hilarious gags, original songs and familiar faces to Winchester audiences. The panto-styled show has been created by the same team behind the theatre's successful pantomimes, including James Barry, who has written and directed the production, with music by composer Simon Slater. The cast of four have all been part of the Winchester pantomime team before. Julian Eardley returns as one of the dames, his 11th outing as a dame in the city. Julian is joined by his comic sidekick from the last three pantomimes, Ed Thorpe. Last year, Ed played the title role in Dick Whittington, as well as Wally in Beauty and the Beast, and Smee in Peter Pan, for which he was nominated in the National Great British Pantomime Awards in the Best Song Sheet category. Libby Gore, who played Fairy Beau Bells last year, is playing the third dame. Tom Atwood, who for the last 3 years has been a resident musical director playing the keyboard for the pantomimes, has this year leapt onto the stage, going back to his roots as an actor to play the fourth dame. On December the 5th, Chief Executive Derek Newland welcomed the first audience to the building since March and was given a spontaneous round of applause. He thanked those who had given the charity's survival fundraising appeal in the summer and by doing so had kept the theatre going during the last few months and thanked them for their ongoing support in keeping live performances alive in Winchester. The team at the theatre have put in significant measures to make the venue COVID secure and have been granted use of the UK's theatre SEAT safety mark that certifies venues are complying with the latest government and industry COVID-19 guidelines to ensure the safety of staff and audiences. Measures in place include the removal of every other row of seats in the auditorium and leaving two empty seats in between each audience bubble. Hand sanitizer stations are placed throughout the building and a one-way system is in place and the venue has increased its cleaning routine throughout and regularly disinfects the auditorium foyer and toilet areas. The bar isn't open during the show, but refreshments are served to the audience while seated in the auditorium. And I can assure you that it is very COVID safe having been there last night.
Concern grows over e-scooters. City councillors have expressed their growing concern over electric bicycles and scooters. Winchester is set to be one of the trial areas for e-scooters for 12 months from spring 2021. At a Health and Environment Committee, members were told that a petition by Extinction Rebellion influenced the latest movement strategy proposals. But Councillor Frank Pearson said he was largely concerned about one of the petition's points. The Extinction Rebellion group had asked that one lane of traffic on the district's narrowest pavements should be for pedestrians and cyclists. But Councillor Pearson said putting pedestrians and cyclists together can be dangerous. The trouble is speed. All of a sudden we also have the trouble of electric scooters, which must be included in this consideration. Councillor David McLean agreed. He said, both electric bikes and electric scooters are very quick and very quiet, he said. The real problem is when they come up behind you. Hampshire County Council is currently working on a programme to help reduce the danger of electric scooters. The County Council is responsible for Winchester's roads, and this was explained by Councillor Martin Todd, who said, there will be good separate facilities. But Councillor Mike Reid disagreed. He said, there are more and more facilities that expect pedestrians and cyclists to share the same space.
Campaigner presses council over crossing. A road campaigner has pressed the County Council for a pedestrian crossing on a major road. Mike Slynn addressed councillors on behalf of the Kings Barton Residents Association, the new 2000 home estate off Andover Road. Local people are campaigning for a pedestrian crossing to link Week and Hairstock with the new Barton Farm Academy that opened in September. Andover Road has a speed limit of 50 miles an hour. Last month, the Chronicle reported a row after the Liberal Democrats allegedly hijacked the issue. Mr. Slynn, a Lib Dem member, said, this is a seriously dangerous place to have to cross Andover Road. There is considerable traffic on Andover Road, which links Winchester to the A34, and traffic speeds on this section are high. The sight line for motorists approaching at 50 miles an hour from the north towards Winchester is poor because of the vertical alignment. A pedestrian was killed in January this year at this location. Currently, 10 primary school children who live in Hairstock and Week have to cross this road to reach Barton Farm Primary Academy. There is just one class, a reception class, at the school at the moment. Next September, the plan is for the reception class children to move up to year one class and for a new reception class to be introduced, implying perhaps 30 children have to cross this road with their parents and siblings every day to and from school. The numbers will increase in future years as two more classes are added to the school each year. Mr. Slynn said secondary school children were crossing the road to reach Henry Beaufort School. The Kings Barton Residents Association, representing some 270 households, has a petition calling for a crossing, improving walking and cycling routes, and cutting the speed limit from 50 to 40 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour. The petition has already attracted more than 500 signatures. In the long term, there are plans to close Andover Road to through traffic and divert vehicles through the new development. The change is planned to happen after 650 dwellings are built. It has taken 3 years and 9 months to reach 270 dwellings occupied, Keller Homes advised. It is likely to take at least another 5 years to reach 650 dwellings occupied and to have the Andover Road closed to traffic, with the traffic then being diverted.
This coach is putting the fun back in business. Excuse me. She's the woman who puts the fun back in business in Hampshire. Trudy Simmons of the Daisy Chain Group in Winchester is a business coach who also runs the Hampshire Women's Business Awards. Trudy said, I help businesswomen to move from feeling stuck to being passionate about what they want to build in their life and business. After years of working in the financial sector, I left that world to focus on myself in 2010. I needed a break, and during that time I wanted to help others find clarity and direction in their professional lives. A small business owner friend came to me in a state of overwhelm, not sure what to do next to keep her business on track. She had so many different ideas, but didn't know how to get them out of her head and into a forward-moving vision. In the process of listening, asking questions, and hacking through the proverbial jungle together, we came up with an action plan. And thus, Trudy the Coach was born. I empower small business owners to grow their business and reach their grandest potential. Trudy has more than 20 years' experience in organising businesses, and in addition to coaching and training, she puts on networking events and nurtures online communities that support women entrepreneurs. She said, "It's important not to feel alone. I would like to encourage all small businesses to try and network as much as they can, especially with the current situation we find ourselves in. It's important to connect with other people, especially if we're all working from home. Networking can shift your mindset and help you take that next step."
After 70 years, it just works. George and Audrey Howard of Chesil Street, Winchester, will be celebrating their 70th wedding anniversary on December the 23rd. Unfortunately, because of COVID-19 restrictions, plans for a hotel stay for a few days to celebrate the platinum anniversary have had to be abandoned. Their daughter, Teresa Cantello, also of Winchester, said, "Mum and Dad told me at the beginning of the year that they didn't want a party or anything like that. But when I suggested a few days away in Eastbourne with me and my husband, Neil, they jumped at the idea. All was well until the second lockdown was announced. And then the agent rang to say that they had to cancel. It's such a disappointment, but we're planning to simply postpone our plans until the spring, when hopefully everything is a little better." Married in nearby Aldershot, when Audrey was 18 and George was 19, she was working as a waitress in the cafe in Church Crookham, and he was a bandsman in the RAMC. They started out in Fleet before moving into army married quarters in North Camp, Farnborough. They had three children, Teresa, Samuel, who sadly passed away in 2001, and Geoffrey, who now lives in Sheffield. The couple have also gained 7 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren over the years. George and Audrey will be watching for the postman on December the 23rd as they are anticipating a large post bag of cards with one extra special one from the Queen. Teresa says her parents are well-liked and are frequently invited to join in social occasion with friends and family. Their double X sense of humour has them known unofficially as the entertainers. Asked what their secret was for successful marriage, Audrey said, "You just take one day at a time. I love him to bits, but sometimes I feel I could throw him out of the window whilst it's still closed." George gave her a sideways look and said, "There is no secret. If you love and respect someone and you get on well together, the time just goes by. It just works." And there is a lovely picture of them at this age. George has a lovely smile and his wife is sort of smiling after that last comment. And on their wedding day in 1950, in his smart uniform and her looking very very posh with a lovely hat and a lovely smile getting into a car. Well done. Congratulations.
Museum needs knitters. A Hampshire museum is encouraging the community to help create a mini squadron of helicopters. The Army Flying Museum in Middle Wallop would like people to take part in its Sky High Art Series of installations next year. The series will involve embroidery and sewing enthusiasts using museum stories, collections and aircraft as inspiration for military-inspired fashion jackets and a graffiti art project. A spokesperson said, "We're inviting people to help create as many mini helicopters as possible to be displayed around our historic helicopters, which range from cobras, lynxes, gazelles and scouts. The helicopters can be any size or colour, and the museum have said that the brighter the better. The closing date for mini helicopters is January the 16th next year, and completed helicopters can be posted to the museum at the Army Flying Museum, Middle Wallop, Stockbridge, SO20 8FB, or if you live locally, they can be dropped off. And there's a lovely little picture of some of the mini helicopters with vibrant colours. We've got a purple fuselage, white rotor blades, red undercarriage. Really, really very colourful. And you can complete them in, as I say, the brighter, the better.
TP's aiming to save pubs Christmas. Two pubs are aiming to end the year on a high by bringing local people together again. The Running Horse in Littleton and Thomas Lord Pub in West Meon have erected giant outdoor teepees in their garden. It is designed so guests can safely social distance while being able to dine outside with up to six people per table from outside their household bubble. The teepees are fully fitted with heating, lighting and a 14-foot Christmas tree. Claire Joyce, Operations Director at the Running Horse, said, "We can't wait to bring togetherness back again using our new teepees. Whether you want to have a cosy Christmas party, a long overdue catch-up with friends or simply to get out and enjoy the festivities, our teepees are the perfect solution. We've selected these village pubs as the home for our teepees so we can create an incredible atmosphere that enables people to socialise safely while still offering the great food and great service during these current times. There's no need to miss out on that Christmas catch-up with those outside your household bubble. Our safely distanced tables, the beautifully dressed interior will help to create a cosy atmosphere, and we know it's the kind of unique experience so many people have and will be looking forward to in the run-up to Christmas and the New Year period. And what's more, those who do come along and eat and drink with us will be supporting our comeback during what has been the worst year for us, where we have seen profits fall significantly this year. Our focus going forward will be to continue being a favourable local eatery within the community. The teepees will remain in place until early in the new year."
Royal Down. Opposition to the plans for a new town near Winchester are growing. A protest petition against the Royal Down Garden Village has this week reached 3,740 names. Local farmer Nick Russell is proposing a 5,000-home development on Down Farm between Oliver's Battery and Hursley. One of the campaign leaders, County Councillor Jan Warwick, said a socially distanced march will be held on Sunday, January the 24th, around the site perimeter, depending on COVID restrictions on the day. She said the aim was to plant 100 wild roses close to the site entrance near Down Farm off Port Lane, within walking distance of Compton Down, Oliver's Battery and Hursley.
Yana wins MP's competition. Yana Razora from St Peter's Catholic Primary School has won Steve Bryan's annual Christmas card competition. The Year 5 pupil won first prize with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Yana now wins a selection of House of Commons-themed gifts. As well as the main prize, there's also a range of year group winners and commendations, and for the first time, an overall runner-up, Nathan Zong of Pilgrim School, who also won the Year 4 category. Scarlett de Carezza from Twyford School won the six-year category, while Chase Middleton from Kingsworthy Primary School won Year 3. Edward Zong of Pilgrim School won Year 2. Aubrey Gregory of Kingsworthy Primary School won the Year 1, and Woodrow Scotch from Kingsworthy won the Reception Year prize. Due to coronavirus, this year was a slightly reduced competition, which meant entries will not be displayed in the Children's Library at Winchester Discovery Centre. Steve Bryan, despite the virus, this was another strong year for entries, and I'm hugely grateful to all busy teachers for making time to allow the children to take part, and of course the children for putting their hearts into it. And there's a picture here of Mr. Bryan and St. Peter's head teacher Louise Buxton, Yana Razora, and Governor Chair Tina Backhouse. And it's a lovely picture of Rudolph with a very red nose and some very beautiful antlers.
Well, that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. Thanks, of course, to Norma.
Thank you. And may I wish you all a very happy Christmas and a better new year.
And thank you, Norma. And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. Do have an enjoyable week. And from everyone here at Winchester Talking Newspaper, I can echo what Norma said. We wish you a very enjoyable Christmas and a very happy and healthy New Year. So when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. And don't forget, there won't now be a recording until the 8th of January. Thank you.